Don't move a muscle. The podcast is starting.
Hello and welcome to Podtrivia Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. This week we're going to be talking about Chapter 12 of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, the Polyjuice Potion.
Yes.
I'm one of your hosts, Joe.
And I'm Cassie.
And today we have a special guest, Audrian McKeon.
Yay! Hello! yeah, we're so excited to have you, Audrian. Now, you are from the That's Allowed podcast, which...
That is correct.
This is going to become a pattern. As I said to you earlier, you are a third guest, and I did listen to your podcast for research. I did enjoy it a lot. But please do tell us a little bit about yourself and your podcast.
Yeah, so the That's Allowed podcast is basically an experiment that I started for myself because I wanted to tell some of the stories that I had sort of over the years been told not to talk about for various reasons. And I just started kind of like, I was like giving myself permission. So that's part of why it's called That's Allowed, is like, you know what? Go ahead. That's allowed. You can talk about that. But also because I have that little voice in the back of my head that's like, excuse me, that's allowed. Like, we can hear you. So it's kind of both sides of that little conversation you have in your head before you're like, should I talk about this or not? And so I'm trying to encourage more people to talk about these things that they're not talking about. And so I bring on a guest every week and they tell the story that they're not telling for whatever reason. And we talk through it and I kind of help them figure out who the message is for and what it means and how it changed them and what everyone can take away from it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I listened to the first, I think, two episodes, which was you talking about your own story, which I think is a good way to start it off. So I really highly recommend it. And I think it's a great effort to surface those stories and get people talking about things. As somebody who has had trouble with that on my own in the past and just knows how like cathartic it can be to
absolutely
talk through difficult things. And it doesn't, I'm sure, like I said, I only listened to those two first episodes, I'm sure it doesn't have to be something traumatic, but just like the message you want to put out there.
Yeah. And often it's not necessarily like, you know, oh, the worst thing that ever happened to me. Those things are powerful. And I think it's important to talk about that stuff because there's probably somebody else out there who's going through something similar that really needs to hear that, like, there's life beyond this and you will get through it eventually and, you know, have a decent life. But a lot of it is just stuff that's like, hey, this is really out there, or, you know, I had this really weird thing happen to me, or stuff like I had a published author who, you know, on the day that his book was published, he's a best-selling author, on the day that his book was published, his father had a stroke. And so all these people were so excited that, like, you know, oh, your life is going to be so great now while he's dealing with this horrible situation. And so things aren't always as perfect as they look on the surface is kind of the general message. And everybody's going through something. So just be kind, you know, like be nice to each other.
Yeah.
That's basically the message of my podcast.
I totally agree. So with that, let's talk about Harry Potter, the series that's about kindness.
So, and friendship and helping.
Yeah, all these good things. So tell us a little bit about your history with the Harry Potter series, like how you got into it.
Yeah, so I was kind of resistant at first, I think because I thought it was just for kids. You know, I was like, oh, that's cool that kids are reading again, you know, neat. But this is a series for kids. Like, I'm not going to read this. But then my sister, who is super duper picky about her literature, recommended it to me. And I was like, really? The kids book? Like, okay. And I was at the airport and they were having a sale on the first Harry Potter book because the second book had just come out. And I was like, yeah, what the heck, you know? So I bought the book and I sat down and just got like addicted immediately. Could not put it down. Read it in the space of the flight. And then when I got off the plane, in SeaTac, I went and bought the second book. And thus began my addiction.
Nice. So that's interesting that you came to it as an adult, because I feel that from our experience and the people that we've had on the podcast previously have all kind of had that story of like, oh, I grew up with it. My mom read it to me at night. And so it's interesting that you came to it as an adult and that you had that unique experience of like perceiving it as children's books.
Yeah.
And then,
but once I started reading it, I realized there was so much more to it. And it's a children's book, but it's more like a young adult book. You know, it's for that transitional time when you are starting to realize like the world is not what you thought it was. And you have powers and you have more to you than you even realize. You know, it's a very empowering story and book.
Yeah. And I think that it makes that transition really well, that it starts out like the first book, kind of the second book, kind of more fall within that children's literature. But by the end, it's full on YA lit. And so it's great that it can grow with its audience like that, and that it can deal with all of these unique themes. And it's a
and
fantastic
by the way,
series.
I do read it to my daughter, who is 8 years old.
Oh, that's nice. Where are you in your reading with her?
Oh, we have just begun.
Oh, okay.
She actually kind of resisted it for a while, I think because I was like pushing it really hard.
She was like, this is children's lit, mommy. I need real books.
I think it just was like, she just wasn't ready for it yet.
Sure.
So I tried to read it to her a few times. We didn't really get into it. We read Narnia and we read some other, you know, series, Wildwood. And so now she's finally like, okay, series are cool. Like, let's do Harry Potter.
Yeah.
So we've just barely started. And this is actually a sad thing. So she's actually, we're all in a stay-at-home order here in the Seattle area.
Right.
And she was at her dad's when that happened. So I have not seen her in a couple of months now, which is really rough.
Yeah.
So we see each other, like we talk to each other on Zoom and stuff every day. She actually asked me, she's very interested in theater. I have a PhD in theater. So she wants me to teach her dialects.
Okay.
So we've been doing different accents.
Oh, yeah. Hagrid is perfect for that.
Exactly. So I'm thinking like this might actually be a great segue to continue reading the series, even though I'm not reading her bedtime stories right now, so that we can do McGonagall, for example. To get that one in there. I love that one. And all the different fun accents in there.
Yeah, that's amazing. Have you ever tried like reading her a chapter over Zoom?
Yeah. That's what I think I'm going to start doing now is like, okay, for the accents, we're going to start reading this book.
Yeah, that's awesome. So Joe is a kindergarten teacher, and he's been reading books to his kids, like recording it and putting it on Google Classroom for his kids.
Excellent. That's great.
Yeah, we're just going through Junie B. Jones. I don't know if Harry Potter is
she
a
loves
little
those.
Too much for kindergarten.
I think it might be. I think there's some scary stuff in here, although I started reading them seven. Yeah,
exactly. But I mean, same with like Narnia and any of those other, you know, books that are ostensibly written for kids. Like there's some scary stuff in the world. And I think it's important to give them tools to deal with that stuff.
Yeah, I haven't read Narnia, I think, since I was your daughter's age. But I distinctly remember there being one book where they're like in a cave with a goblin. And it really freaked me out a little bit.
Yeah, there's some scary stuff.
Yeah,
for sure.
But yeah, so now you can tell your daughter, like, hey, I was on a Harry Potter podcast.
That's right.
And she can get really excited about that.
Exactly.
So what is your favorite book in the Harry Potter series and in general?
Such a hard question.
It is. I know.
I hemmed and hawed on this one for a long time.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Goblet of Fire. And the reason is because, A, it's just so imaginative. Like, she comes up with such cool stuff in that book. Just with all the, you know, the structure of the game and then all the different rhymes and the riddles and just all the cool, like, new stuff that is invented for that book.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also because the characters just grow so much over the course of that book. No spoilers, I won't say how, but there's just a lot that happens in terms of, like, they're becoming teenagers and, like, things are happening and they all go through a lot of personal growth.
Yeah, So my ranking of the Harry Potter books has shifted so much since we started this podcast and just throughout my life.
Sure.
And I always ranked Goblet of Fire very, very high because I think that it's a great middle piece of the series where you get to see these characters. You understand who they are a little bit and you get to see them very much in like the middle of their teenage years.
Yes.
And that's something that I really enjoyed about it. And because it's a thick book, there is so much fun packed in there.
Absolutely.
Like all the different creatures that she invents. And like you said, like the riddles and the challenges, it's a lot of fun. I like Goblet of Fire a lot.
Yeah.
I feel like as an author, she just really kind of hit her stride right there.
Yeah, I think we saw pieces of that with Prisoner of Azkaban. That Prisoner of Azkaban was starting to be like, mm-hmm. wow, she's like, she's really coming along. And then Goblet of Fire was her like, I'm good in this. I've done three of these so far. I know what I'm doing now.
Yeah, exactly.
And so then you said you have a PhD in theater. So I, congratulations, by the way.
Why, thank you.
I'm in grad school right now to get a master's and I hate it and I want to die constantly. So good on you for being able to get a PhD.
You're going to hate me. I'm such a Hermione. I loved grad school. Grad school was like the best time of my life. There's such a nerd.
There's a sick part of me that like still loves school. Joe and I are both teachers. So like I would hope that we love school, but it's also like, God, if I have to think about research instruments for another 10 minutes, I'm going to pull my hair out.
Well, I think it's different too when you're studying theater.
That's like, fair.
A lot of my quote work unquote was like lying in a park in Santa Barbara reading plays. So
that sounds all right.
Yeah. Not so bad.
That sounds better than my master's in educational technology.
Exactly. A little bit different.
Yeah.
A little different. Probably yours is going to be a little bit more marketable than mine has been, I must say.
You never know.
But yeah. But loved every minute of it. Yeah, it was great.
So then what outside of Harry Potter do you like to read? I assume theater, but also I know that when you've studied something for so long, you kind of start to hate it after a while.
Yeah, I'm honestly kind of done with reading plays. Yeah, no, I love memoirs. I think, you know, you can kind of tell from listening to my podcast that I really love people's true stories.
Yeah.
So I've like, there's a great series called the Neapolitan Novels. And now I'm completely blanking on the author's name. But the first one in the series is called My Brilliant Friend. And there's four books in the series, and they are absolutely brilliant. Again, like, couldn't put it down, brilliant books. And they're written as memoirs, but I think they're fiction. But, you know, maybe they're fictionalized truth.
Yeah,
hard
like
to say.
Creative nonfiction. Yeah.
Exactly. I think that's kind of what it is, but it's just so freaking good. So that's the kind of thing that just absolutely sucks me in, is like people's true, authentic, raw stories.
Yeah. Yeah. I've similarly been drawn to memoirs in the past of that, especially when I was a teenager, especially like in my late teens when I was figuring out who I was. I liked reading those stories of people who have been on a similar journey, not even just when they were a teen, like throughout their life. And there's something so powerful and resonant about them.
Yeah.
If you do like memoirs, I really highly recommend Silent Dancing by Judith Ortiz Coffer. It's one of those ones that like just has stuck with me since I read it. I read it in like an undergraduate class, God, in like 2014. And like, I still think back to it all the time and just am like haunted by some of the images that's in it in a good way.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I will check that out.
Does the series that you mentioned have anything to do with Neapolitan ice cream?
It has to do with Naples, which is where the whole thing takes place. it's these two best friends in Naples, Italy, growing up in basically, you know, the bad neighborhood and navigating life together. And they, I mean, I don't want to, you know, give anything away, but they have a very, it's more like a sister relationship. It is a very fraught relationship.
Okay. Yeah. I'll have to check it out because I both love books about sisters and a solid portion of my family is from Naples, Italy. So
there you go.
Maybe that can be insightful for me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Great. So then my last question then is to bring us back to Harry Potter. Who is your favorite character in the Harry Potter series? If you had to pick one, maybe two.
No, it's really hard. So Hermione is definitely my number one. Like, I've just loved her from the get-go. I mean, just the fact that she has like frizzy curly hair is just like, I love you.
Yeah. can relate. Yeah.
Can relate. Right. And just that, you know, wanting so much to be the teacher's pet, like sitting in the front row, like hand up all the time. Like that was 100% me. But at the same time, one of the things I love about this chapter, actually, in particular, is it's the first time where we see her kind of screw up.
Yeah.
And being vulnerable and how hard that is on her. And how, you know, she is so hard on herself and she has so little kind of self-compassion at first.
Yeah.
And how we see that develop, you know, is beautiful. I also really love Luna Lovegood and Tonks. But they, I think Tonks just doesn't show up enough for me.
Yeah.
You know, like she's great, but she's just not very well developed, I guess.
But in a way that's kind of fun that like you do get to enjoy those little scenes with her. Like not every
exactly.
character has to be like the main
exactly.
character. Yeah, I love Tonks as well. And then Luna, of course,
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
Of course. I mean, she's just, oh, God bless her. You know, like as a blonde, I think I just we all relate a little bit to Luna.
Joe is also blonde, so I'm gonna look to him for that one.
I do. I very much do relate to Luna.
So our listeners can join us in 17 years for book 5 when both of those characters will be introduced.
Excellent.
But it's so interesting that you brought up Hermione because, again, as our third guest, you are the third person to say that Hermione is one of your favorite characters. And
well,
I think
here's the thing.
Go ahead.
Were the other two people female?
Yes.
So I think for a female identified persons, Hermione was a really breakthrough character in literature in some ways, because she is a hero in her own right. She's not just a supporting role to the boys.
Yeah.
And I love that. I absolutely love that.
Yeah. And I think, too, that just by advent of the people that still want to talk about Harry Potter in the year of our Lord 2020, they're nerds.
Yeah.
And I say that as somebody Hello. With a Harry Potter podcast. These are the people that like self-identified a lot with Hermione as kids.
Yeah.
And I've definitely been guilty of that.
Yeah.
Something I need to tamp down is perhaps my adulation of Hermione.
Well, and also like she's so powerful, like she's so smart and she's so just good at what she does. But also she's kind of an underdog because she's a half-breed, you know, and she wasn't born into this. She just kind of learned about all of this. And so she feels like she has to catch up. And I think anyone who has any sort of minority status will relate to, we have to do everything like twice as good as everybody else. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's
to be considered, you know, good at all.
Yeah. And that's something that's really coming to the surface in this book specifically, because this is the one where Muggle-born status becomes something that's like discussed and maybe
that's
not everybody treats them perfectly well. So that's definitely, I think, an angle that attracts a lot of people to her. And for me, too, is that she's kind of annoying, too. And I love that about her, because like I think back to myself at like 11 or 12 when I was like, well, actually, in this book, it says like. This I like that she's
such
allowed
an obnoxious
to be that
little
way.
Know-it-all.
She is.
Yeah.
And so I really enjoy that. Hermione truly is such an inspiration, I think, for me as when I was young and like continues to be today.
Yeah. And so relatable.
Yeah.
So relatable.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, you brought up that this is like the first chapter where we start to kind of learn that Muggleborn is like a swear, you know? And I had forgotten that pureblood was the like password.
Yeah.
That right.
That
to get into Slytherin was like,
ooh,
that kind of sent a shiver down my spine.
Yeah. So let's dig into the chapter. And the way that we start that is with a chapter summary. It's my turn to do it this week, unless you want to take a stab
at
it.
No. Go ahead, please.
I think a lot of people are scared when I write
oh
in
God,
there,
I
like
mess it up.
30 seconds. Trust me, we mess them up all the time. But here we go. Joe, do you have a timer ready?
Yep.
All right, here we go. Harry enters Dumbledore's office where he tries on the sorting hat again. It tells him that it stands by what it said last year about him doing well in Slytherin, but Harry disagrees. Harry sees Dumbledore's Phoenix Fox burst into flames, then neglects to tell Dumbledore about anything weird going on, like the voice he keeps hearing. Christmas comes and the Polyjuice potion is done. Harry and Ron go to the Slytherin common room as Goyle and Crabbe, where Malfoy tells him some information about when the chamber was opened last, but he doesn't know much and he is not the one behind the attacks. Hermione turns into a cat.
Cool. Yeah. 28 seconds.
Yeah. I realized like I had written that entire thing and then I was like, oh, wait, Hermione becomes a cat in this chapter.
Exactly. OPS.
Yeah.
Also, Hagrid comes in and defends Harry.
Yes. Which is so significant.
Which I think is significant too.
Yeah. So
I love it a lot.
Let's talk about that scene in Dumbledore's office. Before we get to Hagrid bursting in, I do want to talk about this part with the sorting hat that.
Yeah.
For some reason,
well,
Harry.
First, this is the first time that he goes to Dumbledore's office, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the first time he's ever seen it. And so it's a fun kind of like a peek into this upper world of the school in a way.
Yeah.
And also, I love that he's brought into this room for the first time and they just left alone.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, explore on your own.
They
obviously,
just
he wasn't
drop
told
him.
That, but Yeah, very trusting of McGonagall, or just like, there's nothing that bad that you can do in the headmaster's office. I don't know.
Well, especially that he's being put in there for being suspected to like be behind these petrifications, that you think that they would be like supervising him a little bit more.
I'm sure McGonagall doesn't suspect him.
Right.
It's just like too many coincidences in a row. You can't just leave this kid alone now.
Yeah. But Harry sees the sorting hat in Dumbledore's office because apparently that's where it lives.
Right.
And it, yeah. It brings up a...
Where else would it live? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. On the stool, like in a yeah. like closet in the Great Hall. But he brings up a conversation that we've been having for the past couple of chapters about like whether he belongs in Gryffindor and why his sorting was the way it was, because he's having this like crisis of identity right now.
Yeah,
of,
absolutely.
Like, who am I? And like, where am I from? And how does that define who I am? And yeah. I think it's significant in this chapter that he directly tells the sorting hat, you're wrong.
Yeah.
That like he's starting to form a stance on this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and also that, you know, there's the possibility that he could be the heir. Right. And he's really doesn't want that to be true.
Right.
And so I think he's kind of doubling down on like, no,
yeah,
that is not who I want to be.
Right.
And also this might be an idea of like, even if there is a chance he's the heir, he's rejecting that means he should have been a Slytherin, that means he should be evil.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that your parentage doesn't necessarily determine who you are going to be.
Right. Exactly. And that's something that we brought up and talked about a lot in our last episode about like this whole issue of nature versus nurture. So it's interesting to see Harry starting to say, like, I don't care where I'm from. The choices that I make are the ones that are going to define me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I really enjoy that as a runner throughout this book.
This did bring up a few questions about the sorting hat itself to me.
Sure. Go for it.
So the sorting hat can be put on at any time and like is not surprised that Harry puts it on. Like the sorting hat is just like,
he knows what's in Harry's head.
He knows what's in Harry's head. And
yeah,
but he's not surprised by it at all. I wonder like how many kids do get the chance to put this hat back on.
I imagine very few, because I don't think that many kids go to Dumbledore's office.
Yeah.
Certainly not unsupervised.
Yeah.
Definitely not unsupervised. Unless that's the regular thing. Hey, there's a new kid in the office. Let's just leave him alone for a few minutes, see what he does. See if he kills my bird.
I'm reminded of that episode of Community when they like lock everybody in the room and just keep telling them like, oh, the study will begin in about 10 minutes.
Yes.
Yes.
And
yes.
Watch how they react. Maybe that was the plan.
I don't know. Can you imagine though, like you put back on the sorting hat and it's like, oh, I've made a terrible mistake.
Yeah, like, what do you do?
You should have been a Ravenclaw.
Yeah,
sorry.
We're going to move you. Yeah, that would be troubling. Speaking of troubling things, Harry starts to look at Dumbledore's bird. And just mm-hmm. when he's thinking to himself, like, all I need is for Dumbledore's bird to die, it bursts into flames.
Into flames, right?
It's a very fun scene.
It is.
Yeah.
Especially Dumbledore's reaction. You know, yeah. He comes in and says, it's about time.
But it's like a sickly thing. It's like gagging the whole time he's there. Like, it's not surprising that it was going to die. But he's like, oh, please just give me like another hour or so. I need to not be here when this happens. But yeah, it is nice to see that Dumbledore is not surprised at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dumbledore rolls in. He's like, yeah, I'm sorry I had to see him on Burning Day, but he'll look real
exactly.
good pretty soon.
Yeah. He's usually quite lovely.
Yeah. And so I do want to talk a little bit about phoenixes to give some background on those. So Fawkes is probably named for Guy Fawkes Day. I feel like that's
most
too
definitely
much of a stretch I'm making there for the dumb, ignorant Americans like I was 15 minutes ago before I Googled Guy Fawkes Day.
Yeah, I'm just like silently staring at you. Sure. Yeah. Guy Fawkes Day.
Guy Fawkes Day. I think a lot of Americans want to compare it to like July 4th here. In that it's similar in that people set off fireworks. The comparison kind of ends there. But
it's more like Burning Man, but...
Yeah, actually, that is a good comparison.
Yeah, because you burn the guy.
Yeah, right. So people throw... One of the traditions is to throw effigies of Guy Fawkes onto the fire and watch it burn. So I think...
Who is
there's
Guy
also,
Fawkes?
My dad's from England, so I have a little bit of a background here. So another thing you do is you take, you know, you kind of create a guy, right? Like stuffing hay into clothes. And so you walk around saying penny for the guy, and people give you like a little, you know, change or whatever so that you can buy clothes and accessories for your guy because you want him to like, yeah, you want him to like look nice before you burn him, apparently. So it is kind of a Phoenix-like thing.
That's interesting. I'm glad to have somebody who's a little more informed on this podcast. Joe did ask who Guy Fawkes is, and maybe you can tell me if I'm wrong. This is just based off of my Googling. There was like a conspiracy at some point in history to kill King James I, I think it was.
To blow up Parliament, I believe. And Guy Fawkes was actually like a Catholic. So
there was a religious undertone to it. Yeah.
Yeah. So like it's kind of people are very torn about Guy Fawkes. He was a very polarizing personality.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was basically it was a plot to like mess up the government, basically, because they were mad. I think that they weren't allowed to openly practice Catholicism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Guy Fawkes,
if you ever watch V for Vendetta,
yeah,
there's a little more explanation.
It's been a hot minute since I watched V for Vendetta. So I'm going off of what I read, I think, on history.com. yeah. And it was a failed attempt. It didn't succeed. And I guess people like lit bonfires to celebrate like the king is immortal. Nobody can touch him. All this stuff. And that's, I guess, like that. Where it came from.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a weird holiday, but we've got weird holidays here in America as well. So I'm not going to criticize.
All holidays are weird.
All holidays, honestly, are pretty weird. We've had two very long discussions because we've had two Halloween episodes about like, what is Halloween and like, do people in England celebrate Halloween? And yeah.
I wrote my dissertation on Halloween, so don't even get me started.
Oh, boy. We'll have you on. Actually, I don't think there's another
you'll have me back.
Big
you'll have me back for Halloween.
Halloween chapter, is there? Not that I can think of. Yeah, we'll see.
But
we'll
in this chapter, they do dress up like someone else
That's
by taking
point.
Some polyjuice potion. But we'll get to that.
I really admire your segues. My segues are pretty bad. And with that, we'll move to talking about phoenixes in general.
Yeah, I like that you just shot down that segue. So.
Well, it's getting ahead. I still got
a couple
lines.
Yeah, I said we'll get to that.
Yeah. Yeah. So phoenixes are maybe a deeper cut than just Fox is named after Guy Fawkes. According to Galadriel, and every time I say this when we have a guest on, I feel like an insane person. I have a little book called The Ultimate Unofficial Guides, The Mysteries of Harry Potter that I've had since I was, I think, 9 years old. And it's something that I've been using throughout this podcast. And it's written by somebody named Galadriel Waters. She says that phoenixes are associated in mythology with the Egyptian god of the sun. And legends, of course, say that they die in a pyre of flames and then are born again out of the ashes, just like Fawkes. And she does pull a reference to Fantastic Beasts, the book, not the movie series.
Mm-hmm.
It says that the song of the phoenix will boost courage in the pure of heart while instilling fear in the impure.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so I think this is something interesting in the context of this chapter, because I think we have that question of like, what's inside Harry's heart?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I liked that cut, and that's something that will develop, I guess, throughout this book.
Yeah, definitely.
Another reference to in the Iliad and other Greek mythology about the Trojan War, Phoenix is a character, I guess, who raised and educated the hero Achilles. And in a 2004 interview, Rowling said that the phoenix was her favorite magical beast.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's my background on phoenixes. I know Joe really likes Fox as well.
Yeah, I do. They do seem very overpowered, though.
Phoenixes?
Yeah.
Well, so that's something interesting, too, from Fantastic Beasts. They're apparently very difficult to domesticate and raise. Mm, so
I can imagine.
Yeah. So while they are very powerful, not very many people have them.
Yeah. And it's a good thing to say, like, oh, these are very difficult to handle, raise, domesticate. And of course, Dumbledore has one.
Yeah. It's Dumbledore.
Of course.
Yeah.
And he also has his buddy Hagrid to help him, who, of course,
I was going to say that. I bet Hagrid helped out. Yeah.
So let's talk about Hagrid bursting in with the dead roosters.
Indeed. Gotta love Hagrid.
It's a good scene for Hagrid.
Yeah. We see Hagrid with the dead rooster last chapter as he's talking to Harry. And then Hagrid references that directly when he comes in. Like, I saw him literally seconds before this happened. You cannot say it's him. And Dumbledore tries to stop him, and he just keeps going on. It wasn't him. I swear I'll go in front of the Ministry of Magic and say it wasn't him. And with the context that we're going to learn in a few chapters, that wouldn't help.
Right.
That is true. But I think there's also, like, Hagrid has a personal stake in this of being like, I don't want Harry in trouble for something I know that he didn't do, because I don't want him to end up in a bad situation.
Yeah.
I guess is the best way I can dance around that.
Well, yeah. And, you know, Hagrid is a person, as we'll learn, who has a complicated history and is a fan of justice.
Yeah.
Let us say.
Yeah.
Being served.
Yeah. And justice is something that we've talked a lot about with this book, that like Hermione, for example, chooses to break the school rules and brew the Polyjuice potion and break into the Slytherin common room in the name of justice. So it's always interesting to see which characters Rowling places on the side of justice and who we know are the ones who seek justice.
Right.
Yeah. And then Dumbledore asks Harry if he's seen anything weird, or that, like, if is there anything you want to tell me, Harry? And Harry just says no. And then the scene ends right there.
You can assume that Dumbledore knows something more is going on, but it's willing to let Harry just kind of...
Sure, but there's no like, okay, stay out of trouble. Bye, Harry.
Right.
It was very abrupt, and it was a little strange.
I feel like saying, oh, there's nothing I want to tell you, and then transitioning right to, and then everyone else is panicking.
Yeah.
Works pretty well.
That does work, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to tie every scene up with a bow, you know.
That's true. It just, it feels like it should be a significant scene, Harry talking to Dumbledore, that, like, I'm like, wait, what's happening here?
But it's like how you never hear anyone say goodbye on the phone in, like, TV shows and movies.
Very
rarely.
Gilmore Girls, they do it all the time. And that is my second episode in a row where I've got to talk about Gilmore Girls. Yes. But as Harry said, everybody's panicking in the school. He's like, I'm kind of looking forward to Christmas because everybody's going to be like gone and they can stop giving me dirty looks in the hallway.
Right. Well, and I also love how Fred and
George,
the twins' names
again.
Yeah, Fred and George come to the rescue here and kind of, like, you know, it's like when you own something and make fun of it, then it kind of takes the sting out of it.
Yeah.
And so them kind of like announcing in the hallways, like, oh, stay away, scary, scary wizard coming through.
Yeah, I love the, like, parading him around.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's wonderful.
It is a very sweet thing that they do. And I like to think that they have some social clout, that, like, they're funny.
For sure.
People know they're on the Quidditch team. I like to think that they're pretty well known and respected within Hogwarts. And so I think them doing that, too, shows that, like, we care about Harry. We're going to stick our necks out for him, and it'll help kind of normalize joking about it and not taking it seriously.
And also, the Weasleys are very well known for loving muggles. So for the Weasleys to be the ones standing up with Harry, should help people understand. It does not, but still, it's very nice to see. Make way for the heir of Slytherin, the seriously evil wizard coming through.
Yeah. And I think it's great to see them using their powers for good.
Yeah.
You know, because we see them, you know, making mischief so much of the time, just for funsies, just for their own kind of kicks. So it's nice to see them doing something funny for a kind of greater cause.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah,
but I am sure they're also enjoying it a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Like that, it's of course a bonus that they're enjoying it, but still.
Yeah. But still. Yeah.
And I love the camaraderie in this chapter. And we talked about this a lot in the last Christmas episode, that it's the first time that Harry really feels like he's a part of a family, that he's been kind of welcomed into the Weasley family. And so it's nice again.
So important.
To see that in this chapter, that, like, they're opening presents and Hermione is there for the first time. And it's just a really sweet chapter. They do play Exploding Snap with each other, which I, as a child, always assumed was similar to Spit, except that the cards explode. Apparently, though, Snap is a real card game.
Oh, I did not know that.
I had no
Me
idea.
Either.
Okay. I thought Joe might, because his family loves card games, but
Snap is not one of them.
Okay.
Okay.
But I did Google Exploding Snap. There are, like, actual rules and details on how it's played, which I'm not going to read here because I can't think of anything more boring than listening to somebody read card game rules. But there is a weird little detail about it. In some German editions of the books, the name Exploding Snap is translated as Snape Explodiert or Snape Explodes, which left fans to wonder how Snape was connected to this card game and what was going on. And apparently there was a German fan site which featured an animated exploding Snape.
Of course there was.
The mistake was fixed in like later printings of the book with a new name that I'm not even going to... No, I am going to try to pronounce it, but I'm sorry to our German listeners. Zauber Schnipp Schnapp. which is closer to the actual name that they have for Schnippschnapp is the name of the card game Snap in German, apparently. And Zauber means enchanted.
Zauber Schnippschnapp. I love it.
Yeah. But that was a wild thing to read.
Yeah.
That came from the Harry Potter lexicon, and they're sourcing a book called Harry Potter and the Tower of Babel, which I'm now going to have to go out and purchase.
Yeah, obviously.
Or not go out, purchase from home safely.
Right, exactly. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah, but I really, really got a kick out of that.
It's just making me think of those old websites that were dedicated to one GIF.
Oh, yeah. Like looping. Yeah. Or You're the Man, Dog, that kind of thing.
So I'm just picturing just like it's just Snape exploding over and over again. When
over
you click on that
and over
link.
Again. Yeah.
I need to see if I can dig up this website. I'm going to need to see if I can find this. Yeah, the Dursleys send Harry a toothpick in the mail, which is just needlessly cruel.
Right.
While also saying, hey, can you not come back over the summer?
Yeah, we talked about this too when I think they sent him like a couple of coins in the mail last year that like that they had to go out and like put this stuff in an envelope and send it off to like it's so much effort to be mean.
Yeah, exactly.
It's terrible.
Do you think one of them used that toothpick?
Ugh. Ew. I don't want to think about that.
It's just the level of spite there. It is. It's like epic.
And just like, what are you doing with your life? That like you pause and take time out of your day to be mean to a 12-year-old.
On Christmas.
Right. On Christmas.
It's so mean. Yeah. It's awful. And like, did they sit down and talk about like, I'm sorry to keep harping on this, but like, did they sit in the living room and be like, oh, what kind of like mean trick are we going to pull on Harry this year? Ugh, it's terrible. Mrs. Weasley, though, knits him a sweater. I have a have a big love for Mrs. Weasley. So
absolutely,
very nice.
Yeah,
to
she's
think
wonderful.
We get another little snippet of Mrs. Weasley later in the chapter that I'm very happy about.
Yes. So they have this nice little Christmas scene. They all exchange gifts, which is very sweet. And then they go to dinner. I don't have a ton to say about the dinner, but Hermione tells Harry and Ron like the Polyjuice potion is ready.
It is
good to go. And she goes through this whole plan that she's devised for like knocking out Crab and Goyle so that Harry and Ron can steal their hair and remove them, prevent it from they're sitting there talking to Malfoy and Crab and Goyle storming. Hermione's stolen clothes from the laundry. She's got a piece of hair that she plucked off of Millicent Bulstrode's cloak. And Harry and Ron turn to each other and Ron says, have you ever heard of a plan where so many things could go wrong? And not only was this funny, but part of Hermione's plan with Millicent is that Hermione says like, oh, Millicent left for the Christmas holidays. So if they ask, I'm just going to say like, oh, I came back.
Yeah, they're not Ravenclaws or anything. It's fine.
This is the worst part of the plan.
I know. Well, and again, this is why I kind of love this chapter, because Hermione finally, like, we're seeing her weak spots, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, she's very book smart, you know, but she doesn't think outside the box well.
Yeah, maybe that is true. Subterfuge doesn't come naturally to her.
Yeah, it does not. It does not. And she's just a really honest person, you know? And so trying to be sneaky just doesn't work well for her.
I think she gets better
bless her
at
heart.
It, though.
She does, yeah.
But this
she
is definitely...
She gets a lot of practice.
Yeah,
this yeah, exactly. is definitely a Out of first, sheer necessity.
It's a first pancake for her.
Exactly.
So they go into the bathroom, and they're all standing in the stall looking at the potion. And I need to comment here again on the fat shaming in these books because
seriously,
they're all in the stall and Harry's like, oh no, we shouldn't drink it in here because Crabbe and Goyle are huge and Millicent is no pixie.
Right.
It's just so nasty.
Yeah.
And going back a little bit, when they put Crabbe and Goyle to sleep, they know enough to steal their shoes.
Right.
But only when they get back to the bathroom does Hermione say, oh, I have clothes for you too. You're not going to just be in shoes.
And then they leave their shoes on when they drink the potion. Like, what did you think was going to happen?
I've got a feeling just Harry didn't think it through enough to like take his shoes off.
I mean, no, they're not thinking anything through. They're brewing an illegal potion in a bathroom.
Exactly.
It's just,
you're 12.
Yeah. I don't understand why Rowling does. And I know these books were written a very long time ago and that in the 90s, fat shaming was a lot more common and a lot more acceptable. Mm-hmm. Not that it should have been, but that was what was happening in the world. But it's
You know, she's a person and she has her biases her, you know, like as we've seen, you know, she's not perfect. Nobody is. And so we can appreciate her literature while noting, oh, OK, that's one of her biases.
Definitely.
Right there.
And so this made me uncomfortable. I didn't like that. I especially didn't like the way that it's kind of feminized as well, that like Crabbe and Goyle are meant to be like big, beefy, like bodyguard sorts.
Yeah.
But then with Millicent, it's like, oh, she's no pixie. Just like for her to enforce this idea of like what acceptable femininity is.
Yes.
Just it really rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I didn't.
I'm with you. It's some of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they drink the Polyjuice potion.
And Hermione does not become a pixie.
No, she sure doesn't.
No. And I love how it doesn't tell you what happened right away.
Right.
She just won't come out.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like, it's the first time where we see her really sort of like dissolve into like crying and like, leave me alone.
Well, from in the Halloween chapter last book, when she's being like bullied and she goes to the bathroom to cry. So, yeah, I do appreciate that we get to see that like little crack in the veneer, especially in this book when to date, Hermione has been like at the top of her game. She just brewed this incredible potion. So it's good to see she can make a mistake.
She brewed several potions at this point because she also made the sleeping draught.
Yeah. Just whipped it up in her free time.
And she made cakes.
Like she does.
Yeah, and she baked a cake. That's a good point. but I like, too, that they, like you said, that they save the reveal of Hermione as a cat for the end of the chapter, because I think it heightens the tension of the scene.
Exactly.
That, like, Harry's looking at his watch. He's like, oh, we don't have that much time. We don't have time to figure out what's wrong with Hermione. We just have to go. And I think if they, first of all, the time wouldn't work out if they had stopped and been like, oh, my God, Hermione, you're a cat. But I think they also would have lost their nerve to keep going, too.
Right.
Of like, what's going to happen?
Exactly.
Also. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and that's part of why I think she just decided, like, I'm not even going to come out. Just go.
Yeah.
You just go.
Just go.
Yeah. I think a lot of it was embarrassment as well.
Exactly. Definitely.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah, she's got an ego on her for sure.
Oh, yeah.
And, but I liked that the first hint we get, other than her not coming out, is that we hear specifically, oh, it's Crabbe's voice, it's Goyle's voice coming out, and then it's a high-pitched voice.
Oh, I didn't even pick up on that.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's smart. Before they get to they're like wandering around like, oh, where's the Slytherin common room? Like, how do we get to it? Which I feel like should have been part of Hermione's plan to
Hermione
figure this
must
out.
Have known. Hermione must have known.
Yeah, yeah. And they were just counting on her to show them.
Yeah.
I'm betting.
That's a pattern.
Definitely.
Books.
Definitely.
They do run into Percy, who says that because he is a prefect, nothing will attack him, which I found very funny.
Very funny. You know, now that I'm thinking about that, that's actually really interesting, too, that this is actually kind of the first time that they have to go it alone without Hermione kind of telling them like what to do. So that's a big step for them as well.
Was Hermione
to pull something off without her?
Hermione wasn't there for the midnight duel, was she? Because that's when they all get caught and get detention, right? Or was it Ron that wasn't there? It was Ron that wasn't there.
Ron wasn't there.
Okay, Ron wasn't there,
No, you're right. This is the first time they kind of have to execute the plan without Hermione. I think Hermione knows better than to rely on them like that. Like, she knows better than to just be like, oh, I'll just give them instructions and they'll follow them to a team.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. But so they run into Malfoy. And I really have to say that Malfoy truly is horrendous in this chapter. It is shocking how terrible he is in this chapter, like to the point where I really wonder why people like this character. That I understand that he has a character arc throughout the series, but I also have been on fanfiction.net, and so I know how how loved this character is in like the fandom. And I know part of that is like rewriting the character to fit their headcanon, and that like he does have a past that informs his decisions, but like, oh my God, he is horrible in this.
He's deeply awful. Yeah.
He spews all of this hateful nonsense. And I guess it's not a surprise because like in previous chapters, he has shouted the word mudblood in front of the entire school. So like he's even worse behind closed doors with the people that he thinks will like agree with him. But oh my God, he in the span of 30 minutes insults the Weasleys repeatedly, asks Crab to kick the mudbloods in the hospital wing, calls Colin slime and implies similar about Dumbledore for allowing the Muggleborns in, and wishes death on Hermione.
Yeah.
What?
Well, I think, okay, so I think part of that too is that she's, you know, sort of pushing Ron and Harry in this scene. Mm-hmm. That he's saying all this awful stuff and they have to just sit there and like and pretend it. Like it's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. I almost feel like in that half hour or so that they had a little bit more, I guess, that he was saying more. But this is the significant stuff that they that like really stood out to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sure he went off about a ton of other a ton of other horrible things.
Well, and also, you know, as a theater person, I can tell you like it is. Cathartic. I think the villain characters are always like lovable in a way because they say the stuff that you can't say, they do the stuff that you're not supposed to do, and there's something sort of liberating about that. You know, I think that's part of why people like to root for the bad guy, because it's like, oh yeah, they're so bad. I don't get to be bad like that.
And I'm also, this is me very much looking as an adult, that like as a kid I liked Malfoy, like I thought he was interesting and probably for the reasons that you explained, but now like as an adult looking at this, especially seeing the way that young kids kind of get wrapped up in hatefulness, and a lot of it begins with using hateful words and not realizing the gravity of it, seeing it as an adult and imagining a 12-year-old actually saying these things, it's really shocking and really hard for me to read sometimes.
Absolutely. And, you know, we won't get into the political backdrop of today, but yeah, there's some disturbing stuff going on that just makes you go, oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
That's scary.
He uses the word jumped up to describe Hermione, which I wasn't really familiar with. And I Googled it and I got the definition denoting someone who considers themselves to be more important than they really are, or who has suddenly and undeservedly risen in status. And
gotcha.
Yeah. And this really feels like some of the rhetoric that arose around, like, for example, Jews in the early 20th century when anti-Semitism was. Yeah, I don't need to talk about what happened to the Jews in the 20th century on my family-friendly Harry Potter podcast, but like the language of it is very, very similar to this. And it's just, it's really horrible.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. JK doesn't pull any punches.
No.
Like, she brings in the fascist speech.
Oh, yeah.
In here.
Yeah.
And, it is a kid's book, and we all, like, as kids, I think, experienced bullies, and we knew what that was like for people to be hateful and mean just to try to get power, you know? And so it's a way to kind of introduce you to, like, hey, there are bad, scary people in the world. That doesn't make it okay, and that doesn't mean you're powerless against it. And I think that's one of the wonderful themes of the whole series.
Yeah. Yeah, I think maybe that's why I'm more sensitive to it now, that like with the backdrop of like living in a time where fascism is more of a concern than maybe it was to me when I was originally reading these books at 7 years old. And even when I was rereading these books after I had graduated high school, like it hits a chord for what's happening today. And it's really distressing to me.
Yeah. But again, when you read the books, remember that there's always hope, and there's always, you know, when the characters on the side of justice don't live in fear and get together and do whatever they can do, good things happen.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. And I need that hope sometimes.
Yeah.
We all do. Yeah.
Just a few minor details I want to bring up. You had said it earlier, too, that the password to the Slytherin common room is pure blood. Who picks these? Whose decision was that?
Snape.
Maybe, but like...
Snape, yeah.
I know that, and we've talked about how like black and white this is, that like, oh, all Slytherins, this is the racist house, but like that they're being racist like on main like this with the password being pure blood. It's just...
Ugh. Yeah, like, it's creepy.
The Gryffindor common room has fun ones like Wattlebird.
Ugh. This is also the second like common room that we get to see the entrance of, and they don't have a portrait that they're
going through. No, it's
just a wall. This is just a wall. So Malfoy, like, there's a reason that they couldn't find it.
I guess
Malfoy stops in front of this random wall.
Yeah.
So I almost think that the portrait was making up the Gryffindor passwords.
Maybe.
Probably.
Who is like enchanting this wall to accept specific words?
Maybe the prefix. That makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, I think Gryffindor, like, they don't take themselves too seriously, you know, and I think that's part of why Gryffindor is so likable and relatable, like, as a group and as a house. They have a sense of humor about themselves, whereas the Slytherins are just so serious.
Yeah.
And they take everything so seriously.
Can I ask, what house do you identify as? As our previous guests have just kind of volunteered this information on their own. So, yeah, let me ask.
So I've taken the test several times,
yeah,
and I waffle back and forth between two houses. And I think this is a pretty common thing. Mm-hmm. So Gryffindor and Hufflepuff are the two houses that I usually end up in. And I think the Hufflepuff is because I'm just such a friendship nerd. Like, I'm a total like My Little Pony head where I'm like, friendship is magic. And and I just really believe that. And I think that like the most important thing in life is connection to your friends and like loyalty and, you know, just finding your group and belonging and doing whatever you can to support that community. So I think that's where the Hufflepuff kind of side of things comes from, because they're just super duper loyal.
Yeah.
Like to a crazy fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I came across a test actually on Tumblr yesterday. I'm still on Tumblr for some reason. It sounded interesting. It was like another sorting test and they were like, I don't like the Pottermore one. This is my version. And I guess I admired the... I don't know, the passion behind it. And so I'm I'm curious to take it and see what it spits out.
Yeah.
What's
your house?
All of the tests that I have taken have put me in Ravenclaw, and I feel I feel comfortable with that.
Yeah. I think that's accurate.
Yeah.
I have mostly gotten Ravenclaw. A few times I've gotten Hufflepuff. But
there you go.
I feel like to the same extent that, you know, we can't really get too much into it, but the same extent that Luna is in Ravenclaw. I don't, it's not really clear, but.
As a theater person, I think it was inevitable for me to end up in Gryffindor because I'm just such a little spotlight hog. But I also think that I love the Hufflepuffs because they are sort of the lovable weirdos of the whole thing. And I'm into that. You know, I'm into like, let your freak flag fly, man.
Totally.
Like, be a quirky weirdo.
Yeah. Speaking of freak flags flying, the Weasleys, there's an article in the paper.
Malfoy clipped it out.
He
took a pair of scissors to a newspaper and took out an article saying that Arthur Weasley got a 50 galleon fine.
Yeah, for the flying car. And I think part of it was just like spite for the Weasleys. I think another part of
was
like, my dad was mentioned in the newspaper.
My dad's in the paper.
Oh, he's terrible. And he's pumped about this. He's really feeling it. I did convert 50 galleons to real world money using the Wizarding World money exchanger on the Lexicon. It comes out to 310 US dollars, which is 250 pounds or 285 euros.
But if we look at it in Weasley money, it's too much.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
They had, like,
they
one,
had
galleon.
One galleon and change in the beginning of the school year.
So this is a hit for sure.
It's a big hit.
I just...
They'll have to sell a kid.
It doesn't seem... It doesn't seem like that much money, though.
For enchanting a car and crashing it into a school?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's pretty negligent.
That's fair. When you put it that way.
Yeah.
This was also a while ago, too. So, you know, think about when it was written.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Because the converter that I use converts it to like our money using exchange rates down to like the minute. So wow. I should have checked what it would have been in like 1997 money.
Yeah.
I guess less. Even though, inflation, that's how it works, probably. I was an English major.
I don't know. Let's go with that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, he's really loving it. It's so nasty. But I know Joe wants to talk about the last line of the article.
Yes. So Mr. Weasley was unavailable for comment, although his wife told reporters to clear off or she'd set the family ghoul on them.
Oh.
I could see her like on her porch with a broom yelling at a bunch of people with cameras.
I worry sometimes that I like Molly Weasley so much because she reminds me of my mom. And I can totally see my mom threatening this if we had a family ghoul.
Oh, yeah. She would use that thing constantly.
Oh, yeah. Like one of the ways that my mom would spook us as kids is she would tell us, don't jump on your bed because then the bed will break and you'll fall through the floor to the basement where you will have to sleep with the ants. And I feel like that is just a touch away from like sicking the family cool on someone.
Yeah, that's pretty close.
Yeah. So I did enjoy it.
I think when you have that many kids, like you just don't suffer nonsense.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom only had three. So like, who knows where seven would have pushed her?
Far.
Yeah. But also, like, at a certain point, you kind of have to devise these things to tell kids because kids ask you a lot of stupid questions. Like, well, why shouldn't I jump on the bed? And like, sometimes it's easier to just say, like, well, the ghoul will get you.
I mean, as a kindergarten teacher, I do put my, like,
you try to be honest.
I do my best to, like, take time to explain everything, but there are a lot of times where like, hey, I'm in the middle of like reading you something to the whole class, I cannot stop and like explain each little thing to every kid who wants to raise their hand, and half of them are not related to what's happening. We're moving on right now.
We do get our first mention of Azkaban in this chapter. Draco mentions it and says, like, it's the wizard prison. We can't talk that much about it right now.
Yeah, exactly.
The next book is called The Prisoner of Azkaban. So, like, let's just hold off for that one. But I did want to bring up, Rowling did write a history of Azkaban on Pottermore, which is too long to read here and also has a lot of spoilers. So I'll just put the link in the show notes for those who do want to read it. But she did talk a little bit about how she came up with the name Azkaban. She says it was a mixture of the prison Alcatraz, because that's the Muggle equivalent, I guess, that she wanted to pull from, and Abaddon, which is a Hebrew word meaning place of destruction or depths of hell.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That I did not know.
Yeah.
I figured there was an Alcatraz, you know, reference there, but the rest of it, I did not know.
Yeah. So I like when she directly comments on like the process of selecting names rather than me just like speculating. But yeah, it doesn't sound like a good place. And Draco, like this scene kind of ends with Draco confirming that he is not the heir, that he wishes he knew who it was, and that he has heard some information about the Chamber of Secrets being open in the past from his dad, that it was 50 years ago that they caught somebody and that a Muggle-born student died, which is where he jumps to, I hope Hermione dies.
Right.
But we also get the line where his dad said, it'll look suspicious if you know too much about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is significant.
Doesn't it? And doesn't it mention something about like their house and like creepy things in the basement?
Yeah. Malfoy mentions that there was a raid on his house recently by the ministry, that they didn't find anything because they have this like secret hidden room.
Right.
Yeah. And Ron is like, oh, can't wait to tell my dad about that. And like, I totally get this for
Absolutely.
Ron.
Absolutely.
After he just listened to all of the hateful stuff that Malfoy said about basically everyone, but especially about his family. Good for Ron for being like, oh, yeah, get him on this.
I'm going to nail him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of cool details dropped here that will develop in future chapters. But Harry and Ron, their little session is kind of cut short by Ron's red hair starting to poke out, and they run off and pretend that they're going to the hospital wing. And then they go back to the bathroom and see Hermione as a cat.
Well, first Moaning Myrtle.
Yeah.
Is like making fun of her.
Yes. We're big fans of Moaning Myrtle here.
Oh, yeah. She's great.
She's like, great. Wait till everybody sees your tail. And Harry says something here that I found shocking. He's like, we'll take you to the hospital wing. Madame Pomfrey never asks too many questions. I feel like this is a situation in which she should ask some questions.
But also, I completely understand. Like, that's what they do with real hospitals. Call
this
the emergency.
This is a school hospital.
But I'm saying, if you are in danger, call.
Yes.
Call an ambulance and they will do whatever they can to save you. You won't get in trouble. We just need you to not die.
Yes. So maybe this was a responsible thing for Rowling to write in. But like the idea, like if one of your kindergartners came in with like a big bruise on his arm from recess and so you're like, nobody's going to ask any questions. You would assume that something happened there and want to know what it is. And especially these kids have a paper trail of them taking this book out of the library. Remember, Madame Pince like inspected that note that they got Gilderoy to sign for the book.
Yeah.
It just
There are a lot of spells in that book. And also, this is not a common side effect of the Polyjuice Potion.
I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I guess there are a lot of things that probably happen in wizard school that send people to the hospital wing where it's just...
Exactly.
I don't know what went wrong. I was just practicing.
Exactly.
So maybe Madame Pomfrey has just learned over the years, like, I'm not going to ask questions. I'm just going to fix them.
Yeah. I mean, I would think that he would just get exhausted.
Yeah.
And for your argument of there's a bruise on a kid in my class, someone's in danger there. You know, this is like,
I guess. Yeah.
He got hurt or she got hurt for a reason.
Meanwhile, Hermione turned herself into a cat.
She's a cat. It's something that you would be tempted to question. But if you want your kids to keep coming back and being healed by you, maybe don't grill them every time they come in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And also, if like if somebody else turned her into a cat, you would think that she would like go tell somebody about that. You know,
yeah, that's true.
If she turned herself into a cat, it's like, just don't ask.
Yeah. Okay?
Just don't ask.
And that's kind of how the chapter ends. Like in my brain, this is such a big chapter, but it kind of went by fast for me.
Yeah, I had that same experience where I remembered like this chapter really stands out like in this book for me. That's why I was so excited that it was one of the options because I was like, oh, yeah, I definitely remember that chapter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it ends so suddenly and you're like, oh, that was it. Like,
yeah,
I remember there being more.
Nothing is really like resolved or finished in it either. Like there's the weird end of the Harry Dumbledore scene. And then like they kind of just leave Draco without really having learned anything. And it's just it's an odd chapter, especially.
But it is a turning point in a lot of ways. Like they, you know, they got what they could out of that Polyjuice potion. Yeah. They're done with that.
And they've eliminated
Malfoy, which was their only lead, really.
Yeah, exactly.
So now we get to watch them in the next chapter flounder around for something else.
Like back
else.
To square one.
Yeah.
What do we do from here? Yeah. So it is interesting. It just an odd chapter. It is also, I should note that we have passed the halfway point of the book now. I think the end of this chapter, my app said we were like 62% of the way through. So yeah, it couldn't resolve everything. Go on.
I think that's a pretty crushing blow to Harry, too, that their one lead didn't pan out because it's like now that means I'm the only suspect.
Oh, that's true. Mm. I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were like,
so
kind
that's
of
a rough one.
Yeah. They were banking on this idea of Malfoy and like, we'll find the evidence. We'll report him to the teachers and that'll be that.
But, and that's that. But yeah. No.
But now he's back to being Hogwarts'
suspect
most
number
wanted.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, also, it's kind of on them for like,
oh, it was a nonsense theory of like, who do we know who hates Muggleborns?
Exactly.
Who do we know who sucks? It's Malfoy.
But then they also donated
to
like over a month to this.
Yeah.
They started not long after Halloween.
It was Halloween. Yeah. That they.
So, you know, 2 months of like. Yeah.
Poor
All
Hermione.
Of this work. Poor Hermione.
Spent a month brewing
but
this
also,
potion just to turn herself into a cat.
Ignoring the cat, Hermione got a lot of good practice with the potion making, and I'm sure she enjoyed it.
Yeah.
She enjoyed it. It's like an extracurricular activity for her.
She got to do a really complicated potion.
Yeah.
And it worked for two of them.
So that's,
and, I mean, it worked for her, too. It's just that she didn't think through, like, oh, I found this hair on somebody's cloak. It couldn't possibly be anything other than her hair.
Yeah.
You know, like,
And like, clearly it was short hair. It wasn't like a long strand of hair. She was like, oh, what a conveniently sized chunk of hair to be left on my robe.
Maybe Millicent has short hair.
Maybe. We don't get a big description of her.
Besides her being large, no, we don't.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, she's subhuman, basically. So, like, why basically, would we hear about her?
Well, we get a lot of details of Crabbe and Goyle in this chapter because obviously Harry and Ron turn into them.
Yeah.
I don't remember the description of Goyle in the previous book being
he's big.
that he has like weird short hair on his forehead. Like they really kept focusing on it.
I was a little confused by that too, because there was a lot about the forehead, but no, Harry is saying that he feels his hair like receding back, because I think the assumption is Harry's hair is very long and messy. And I think Goyle is meant to have like kind of a buzz cut.
But like he, even when they're pulling the hair off him, he's saying like he pulls some of the wisps off his forehead or something.
I wasn't totally sure why Goyle had hair on his forehead either. a weird chapter. So that brings us to Spell of the Week.
All right. And for Spell of the Week, it is not a spell. I decided to focus on the Sleeping Draught.
Oh, which... I thought you would do the Polyjuice Potion.
No, we talked a lot about the Polyjuice Potion.
Oh, did we? Okay. Okay, that's fine.
Oh, no. You know what? We didn't. Hold on. Give me 3 minutes.
We realized as we were doing Spell of the Week that we were going to run out of spells at some point. So it became like magical object of the week, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
I assumed that in the first chapter that they started brewing it, we talked about
it. But
I remember saying, oh, we're going to save this until the Polyjuice Potion chapter. So
yeah,
sorry. okay. You did go into the...
Where she got the ingredients. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Gotta move past that then. Sorry.
Maybe there's not that much interesting about the Polyjuice Potion. Maybe
there's really not
a
lot of information.
Yeah, they don't give a lot of detail.
Pretty much everything about the Polyjuice Potion, other than the like reasons behind the ingredients, which we talked about previously, is just written in the chapter.
Okay, so just do the Sleeping Draught then. Nobody says we can't have like two Spell of the Weeks.
Well, we should give them a little bit of detail about it. The Polyjuice Potion is obviously a potion that changes one person into another for an hour. Just the body, not the clothes, which it would be kind of impressive if you like grew extra clothes. But the potion does change into different colors and smells depending on what person is in there.
Yeah, I think they said that Harry's tasted like rotting cabbage.
Yeah, so...
I wonder what my Polyjuice Potion would taste like.
Right?
Probably cheese.
I don't know about that, because knowing Crabbe and Goyle,
they ate just
a lot of like cakes and stuff.
Yeah.
And they did not have a good tasting potion.
So maybe it's more about your character.
Probably still cheese then.
So the Millicent's, which was really Millicent's cat, was a sick yellow color.
Like cat pee.
Oof. Goyle was khaki, was the khaki color of a booger.
Yeah.
And Crabbe's was a dark, murky brown, which the potion originally, before the people ingredients are added, is already like a brown. So maybe Goyle is just like, or maybe Crabbe is just like really plain and dark.
Just bland.
Yeah. Ugh. In summary, it was just that the fact that Hermione was able to do it is said by Rowling to be a very impressive feat.
Yeah.
That she made a successful one at such a young age.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's Spell of the Week. And that kind of brings us to the closing of our podcast. We don't have any emails, unfortunately, to talk about. But you can email us at owlpost@potrificustotalis.com with your questions, your corrections, your comments, anything like that. Do send them in. And then we'll talk about some plugs. So tell us where people can find you on the web.
Absolutely. So you can find That's Allowed, which is spelled A-L-O-U-D, by the way. You can find That's Allowed on Anchor or pretty much all of the pod places. I also have a website, which is thatsallowed.com.
Perfect. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So definitely do look it up. As I said, I listened to the first two episodes. I really enjoyed them. And I will listen to future ones. And I encourage our listeners to do the same.
Fabulous.
Yeah, I do intend to. But I have not driven in a car and have not had a real reason to listen to too many podcasts. But
I know. That's the funny thing. It's like you would think that, you know, oh, people aren't working right now. They can listen to more podcasts. But it's like everybody listened on their way to work. So.
Right.
Yeah. I blew through so many podcasts on my drive every day. But
absolutely.
Yeah. Now it's like, oh, I'm washing dishes, so I'll listen for 10 minutes. And that's it. Yeah. But you can definitely check out Audrey in there. And you can find us on the web at podtrificustotalis.com, where you can find detailed show notes and all of our episodes and all of that fun stuff. You can follow us on Twitter at Podtrificus. And that's kind of all that I check. And you can also subscribe to us on basically anywhere you find podcasts. You can review us on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser. They are no longer, when this episode goes out, no longer doing their donations to the COVID-19 Relief Fund. But you can still review us on there, and I'll probably still reply because, as we said, we're all locked up in our homes and I don't have much going on. So, and then you can join us for Chapter 13.
The Very Secret Diary.